Thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
When he's been in, been a factor.
Hasn't scored. He's taken only two shots, Karnowski. That's Williams.
That's what they said. Perkins now on Jackson. He can rebound.
There's Hicks. And hits one from the floor.
And great cut. The tremendous pass by Brad.
Berry.
A nice pass. What a play. Nice screen and dive by Meeks.
17-5 stretch going back to the first half.
Nice high-low here. That's what they got to use, the big guys, when they're in the game.
And Collins is fouled.
And the assist. Karnowski from the top.
Tilly, floater.
Good hands by Tilly, though. Look at this. I love it.
Tilly on
what
the floor. Karnowski at last. And that was hard effort by Tilly that made it happen. And a foul. First shot of the second half. Berry. To Hicks. And one.
They're going to give this to Karnowski, or...
Collins back out with it.
Empty side.
Williams
short.
Banks
is me. How about that?
Hicks wanted the drive on Williams.
How about
it up.
That? Oh, wow. That's what you need from that guy. Big time. Palm, hold, deliver.
But stepping up when it matters the most, the senior, Hicks. Hang time and a little smooch.
Don't force it if you're Goss.
Comes in. Blocked by Meeks. Barry right up ahead to Jackson. And he dunks it down for the five-point lead.
Two possessions defensively with a great, fantastic block. Jackson with the easy finish and then the...
Matthews off the mark, and this year the confetti is going to fall for North Carolina. They're not going
to
be...
Yeah, you're listening to the Urban Sports Sound Wall. I'm hearing my boy Will T. You just heard the final, the national championship game with the North Carolina Tar Heels beating the Gonzaga Bulldogs in a matchup 71-65. Will T, what's good, man?
What's going on, man? How you feeling?
You know, we made a gentleman's bet, you know, before the game, and I don't feel good because I got to actually come on the show and state this.
No, I mean, so for those who don't know, first of all, let me ask you one question. Did you stay up and watch One Shining Moment?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm gonna play that too after our first segment.
Lord have mercy.
Yeah, I was a surprise for you, and now you know what I'm saying, you ruined a surprise for your own self, Will T. You get to hear One Shining Moment.
Yeah. Well, I didn't stay up and watch the whole game.
But it was boring you?
No, I sent you guys my text, my whole tantrum on not even a tantrum, but my statement on, you know, just. You playing a game at 9:20, the NCAA, you say it's in the best interest, you out for the best interest of college athletes, but you playing a game at 9:20 at night that's going to last for 3 hours, an hour extra because you want to have extra commercials.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm with you. I think that to me, I don't, you know, like I told you via our text, I don't care for the West Coast. I know you're trying to please everybody, all the, you know, all regions and whatnot. But I think just to be responsible, a game at 8 o'clock is fine. An 8 o'clock game is perfect.
No, I totally agree with you. Game should have been the start at 8, not 9:20, not 9. Stay at 9:20, but it's more like 9:30 once you get past the national anthem and the introductions and everything. But I surprised myself. I actually stayed up and watched the game up until 12:45 until the second quarter. I mean second half.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, "Nah, I'm going to sleep."
Well, I'll say this much. We'll get into a little bit more anyway, but the officials ruined that game. That game could have been better than what it was, but the officials they put their imprints in the game, and you don't want that in the championship game. I would say this. I wish the college tournament or college playoff system, whatever you want to call March Madness or the field of 68 now, I wish they would take a book out of the NFL and how they, I mean, excuse me, out of the NBA and how they officiate games in the playoffs where you have to literally mug somebody to get a call. You know what I mean? Like, let the kids
play. I mean, then you get people complaining about they not calling enough fouls.
But I think that you still want them to play rather than having key players in foul trouble when you don't want. You know,
I agree. Yeah. I agree. One way you can get rid of that is you can, I mean, one way to speed up the pace of it is you go to 4 10-minute quarters, and you know, after five, you know, not the end of a quarter, mm-hmm. you know, once you reach 5 team fouls, then it resets when it goes to the next quarter, opposed to going to 2 halves. And you know, once you get 5 team fouls, it's pretty much you slow up the game.
That's true. I just didn't like that you got key players in foul trouble who weren't really committing terrible fouls. I have an issue with that.
Like I said, I haven't watched the whole game. Mm-hmm. I'll probably, let me stop lying to myself. I'm not going to watch the whole game.
It's already done. You don't need to worry about that.
Yeah, what I care about.
Exactly. Hey, Will T.
Let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
Here are our topics. North Carolina winning the national championship game last night at 8:20. Patrick Ewing become the new head coach of the Georgetown Hoyas. Thank you, Patrick. Thank you. At 8:30, opening day for the Washington Nationals and Baltimore Orioles. At 8:40, the Redskins signing inside linebacker Zach Brown. Finally, we'll have Cecilia Towns from GladiateHers.com to talk about the women's national championship game and UConn losing in the Final Four. But up first,
we're not going to talk about Anthony Romo going to CBS.
We can mention brief, and I didn't want to keep you in here all day.
Okay.
Well, we could talk about it, though.
I don't,
we can, though. I mean, we can. No, everybody's been talking about it.
True.
Yeah.
I mean,
we could talk about it. We'll talk about that during the Redskins segment.
Okay.
All right. The national championship game. Brief of your, what were your thoughts of the first half? You saw the first half of it. So basically, you saw the 12-minute mark or just the whole first?
Yeah, I saw the first half, and then I saw up to 12 minutes.
Well, yeah, tell me what you.
Seconds.
Yeah, tell me what you thought of the game up to that standpoint.
Carolina played better defense than I anticipated them playing. Gonzaga wasn't scared of the big moment. You know, that's a program that it had taken them over 20 years to get to that moment. You know, they've never been to the national championship game. And then being what people consider a small school, some people thought that maybe the moment would be too big for them. The kid, Zach Collins, he got in foul trouble relatively early. That's one of the reasons. Because he's a very talented kid.
Yeah, he got fouled out, actually.
He got in foul trouble early. And then North Carolina doing what they usually do, which is playing at a quick pace. Mm-hmm. Getting the ball out after made basket, getting the ball up the floor after a turnover. It just, you know, to me, Roy Williams was put in an optimal position where he didn't have to make too many in-game.
No, he didn't have to. Sure didn't.
Adjustments, mm-hmm. you know, and I think Roy Williams is a good coach. You think otherwise?
He's got 3 national championships. He's a great coach. I would say he's a great coach. Okay, I'm not. I don't like Roy. Like, I have to give him credit. He won 3 championships, right? Yeah. 3 national championships. But to me, he's still predicated on a bunch of talent, and he's a great recruiter.
I mean, we had the discussion last week, though. I think there are very key elements to being a good college coach, mm-hmm. which is different than being a good pro coach. Mm-hmm. And one of the key essential elements in being a college coach is recruiting.
Yeah, I agree.
And his ability, you know, there are a lot of guys that get top 10 classes all the time. Coach Calipari, mm-hmm. he gets top 10 classes all the time. Top 5, top 2 classes. Yeah. How many championships does he have? One. So to me, there takes a certain level of tactical intelligence that takes a ability to manage not only a staff but players and manage a university, you know, university board of trustees and also donors and fans. Roy Williams truly balanced out. He's one of the better college coaches. Now, is he a great at making in-game adjustments? No, but he prepares his teams exceptionally well.
No, again, I don't think that Roy Williams, I mean, I'm going to give Roy Williams credit. Just because he's won 3 championships, I think that's a feat that, you know, many don't have. And if you look at what he's done, even like you said, with talent, he's done well with talent. I think Calipari's situation is a little different compared to Roy Williams, because Calipari,
not at all.
No, let me explain. Calipari, when he wins his champion, when he competes or whatever, it's all with freshmen. Roy Williams does not, his guys, the guys he keeps, they don't stay. When he's competed, to be honest with you, he's never had like a freshman laden team. His guys have stayed.
Yeah.
And I'm not knocking
there's
it.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that, but he's got experience. He's getting stronger players. Just like the same thing, okay, we talk about mid-major players when they compete well against big schools because they got senior leadership.
Well, let me tell you this. Whose fault is it that they...
It's nobody's fault. I'm not blaming him. I'm just saying...
But you're still... away. You're detracting from Roy Williams.
All I'm saying is that when we compare him to Calipari, it's a little different.
I don't think it's any different. Calipari chooses to recruit...
One and done. He does a great job with them.
And not only that, but he does have some juniors and seniors on his team.
Yeah, but that's those guys, right, who can't cut it. But he does have like two.
No, he had like this year his team, he had
Briscoe, Dawkins.
He had a couple of guys that were sophomores and juniors.
Yeah, Briscoe
and one senior, if I'm not mistaken.
Did he play? Did the senior play? I had Kenny.
I can't
go back into.
No, I mean we remember Calipari's teams because he has exceptional freshman talent, yeah, guys that are one and done.
Great.
But we all know that when it comes to college basketball, specifically March Madness, it doesn't, not always the more talented team makes it to the championship.
Never.
If that was the case, Florida State would have made it to the Final Four. Florida State has a very talented team.
Definitely. I agree. They're
but you saw what happened to them in the second round.
Yeah, pro prospects. I mean, always, like, it's leadership. You get senior leadership or guys or veteran leadership. I can't call them seniors because sometimes they're juniors or whatnot. But you have guys who've been in school a couple, 2 to 3 years. Those programs typically do well in the tournament. I'm not knocking. This is actually credit to Roy Williams. That in an age where kids want to leave early, very talented kids want to leave after their first year, he's brought in guys and fostered an environment for guys for players who want to stay 2, 3, maybe 4 years. So I give him credit. That's not a bad thing. Now, but I do think he does recruit. But in terms of the talent he brings in, he's been able to cultivate an environment where he can stack his team in a deep way, and he brings in the guys that he brings in are guys that can play his style and are one of our top. I want to say they were at one point in time were top recruits when they decided to come to North Carolina.
I think that's fair, but all I have to say, you still won't give Roy Williams the just due of winning three national championships.
Okay, speaking of Roy, I want to give Gonzaga some credit. I want to talk about Gonzaga before I get to Roy Williams. I do want to talk about Roy Williams even more. I obviously not watching Gonzaga. I don't watch West Coast basketball often. I really don't. The only West Coast ball I wanted to see was ball. Gonzaga impressed me because they had to do William Gauss, who like the guard who posted up, and it was the guy that pretty much was leading this team down the stretch in this game against North Carolina. I swear, if he didn't twist his ankle, I think that they beat North Carolina. And Mark Few made one bad decision. Once he twisted his ankle, he should have scrapped the game plan of going to Goss and went to the big man. The big man, though, was missing nothing but layups. He missed a rack of layups. But at the point in time, he was still getting – and, Wilson, we play basketball. You know, like, if a guy's getting bunnies or chippies, you still want to go at him. Even though he's missing them, you're like, you know what? You're going to make the next layup. I'm giving you layups. You're going to make the next layup.
And for all you people out there hating, saying my guy doesn't know coaching basketball, tell him what you did this weekend, man.
Oh, man, you know, I'm a championship coach for 14 U, Prince George's County, PG County, Merlin.
So that makes you qualified to tell Mark Few what the hell to do.
I'm going
to
tell Mark Few what it is. Tell him what it is. Mark Few, what he should have done. You listen to a championship because I won a championship. He didn't win a championship over this weekend.
You wanted that exactly.
I won a championship over the weekend.
Talk that talk.
You're going to learn today. You know it. I saint it, son. I saint it. I held a trophy. I had a Gatorade bath. Champagne. Apple cider, son. Apple cider. Mark Few didn't
talk that talk.
But, but no, he didn't get the ball to Karnowski. Karnowski, I'm a guy that when their huge center who to me again got anything he wanted in terms of position and shots over Hicks and Meeks, and he didn't finish. But down the stretch, instead of going to Gauss, I would have went to the center because I felt like he would give you an opportunity to score easier, and he didn't do that. And I felt like at that moment you could tell that one coach was there, has been there before, and Roy, and another guy, even though he seemed he's a stoic coach, that he doesn't show any he doesn't get all hype or overhyped. At that particular moment, you knew that, you know what? The moment might have been a little bit too big for you, just at that point in time.
And that's advice from a championship coach.
Exactly. That's what I do. All I do is win championships, dog. Exactly. All I do is win, no matter what.
Exactly.
You know it. All right. So I got that out. Two Roy Williams, three championships, all in North Carolina, none in Kansas.
Damn, you just gonna slight him the whole night.
No, I'm gonna say it. Where would you rank Roy Williams in terms of all time head coaches in the college game?
So, people aren't going to give Roy Williams his just due because he isn't seen, he isn't deemed, or the perception is one that he isn't a great basketball strategist, great basketball mind, right? Mm-hmm. But I think you have to start making the case for him, you know. And here's why: he's won three national championships at North Carolina. Those three national championships that he's won, you can't say that he's won with elite level NBA talent. He's won those championships with some guys that have made it to the league, mm-hmm. but he hasn't won those championships with guys that you can say are all time great going at the next level. Mm-hmm. So like you said, he's cultivated a culture, a program where, you know, you come to North Carolina, you stay, most guys are going to stay maybe 4 years, and he develops that talent, and he gets the most out of that talent, and he helps those guys. And he continues to recruit on top of those layers and layers of talent, mm-hmm. and he makes teams that are able to make deep runs every 3 to 4 years in the NCAA tournament.
I think in terms of the historical context, he's competed. He's done a great – he did a good job in Kansas. He didn't win a national championship, but it's hard to win a national championship. I mean, Kansas, he had
look how Paul long it Pierce. Took you to get one.
I know, man.
To get a county championship.
Yeah. That's real talk, man. That's real talk. You know, he's coached guys in Kansas like, you know, Ray LaFrance.
Jacque Vaughn.
Paul Pierce. So, you know, he's had.
Scott Pollard.
Yeah, good one. Another one. So while his time in Kansas, he had some talent, but he went to North Carolina where it's a little easier to get more talent. It's not a knock on his coaching.
Damn, you just keep slighting him.
It's not a knock on his coaching, but he did do something that many haven't done. He won three championships in North Carolina. How many championships have Dean Smith has in Carolina? I believe two.
I'll take it a step further. He did it at North Carolina, and he did it in the ACC that has at least four other Hall of Fame coaches with Jim Boeheim, mm-hmm. Pitino, Coach K, mm-hmm. and who am I forgetting?
You said Pitino?
Yeah.
Because he's now in the ACC now. You going to count that, though?
Yeah. I want to count that. Didn't he win it?
He won this year. Yeah. He's right. This year still there. You're right. It's tough.
And he's also got a good coach in
Jim Larrañaga.
Jim Larrañaga and Tony Bennett are good coaches.
Yeah, Tony Bennett. Yeah. I mean, it's some stock coaches in that
league, he played, and you have Mike Bray at Notre Dame.
A great coaches.
So he did it well. Playing in a league with upper echelon coaching.
Yeah, I agree. I just think now when you rank him, you got to talk about him in a mix of, you know, I mean, if you're going to be fair, because we're talking about championships, like a Dean Smith, Bobby Knight.
He's Coach above K. Bobby Knight to me.
Okay, you see above Bobby Knight. Wow.
Yes, above Bobby Knight.
Bobby Knight worked with like quite – his talent wasn't the best in the world.
Yeah, his talent wasn't the best in the world. See, this is a thing, right?
So about recruiting – okay.
I'm talking about Indiana right now. I know we're going off the subject.
We're all good.
I think it's cool.
Okay, that's cool.
Indiana now, they have Archie Miller as the head coach.
I like Archie Miller.
I think Archie Miller is a fabulous
selection.
Hire. Mm-hmm. But when people talk about let's restore Indiana back to what it used to be, no, Indiana, Bob Knight built that program. I understand that Indiana, basketball is the thing in Indiana. But let's not talk like Indiana was had such deep history before Bob Knight. They didn't. True. Bob Knight built that franchise. I mean that program. Just like we'll talk about another.
That's good. That's a good segue.
Yeah, we'll talk. We'll go into the commercial.
Yeah, that's why.
Yeah, so commercial good. Break. When we get back from commercial break, we'll talk about another program, Georgetown, that is gone back within there. Was pretty much kept it in the family.
Ah, you heard my man. You listen to Urban Sports say
for ages.
You dig?
Deuces. One shining moment.
Ball is kicked, and there you are. You're running for your life. You're a shooting star. And all the years, no one knows just how hard you work.
Defending national champions, the 2-seed Duke Blue Devils are out.
The time is short, and the road is long, and the blinking of an eye.
This is an opportunity for growth, and you have to use it as such.
The coach's son and dad with a smile.
Brilliance in full display.
Joined his chance to show what he can do against Lonzo Ball.
Man, one shining moment is awesome. I'm gonna lower the volume a little bit because I still want to hear the song as we do the show. Excuse me. You know, I can't get my stuff together. I love one shining moment, man. I wish I played college basketball. I got to hear this song. It would be like my moment. Anyway, you listen to Urban Sports Scene, myself, Wiley, my boy Will T. We are on Twitter. Tweet us at Urban Sports Scene, no S after sports. Also, like our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. You know a guy who got to experience one shining moment? Patrick Ewing, now the head coach of the Georgetown Hoyas. Hoya Saxa, we are Georgetown. I feel like, you know, it's coming back to the days of when I watched Alonzo Mourning to Kevin Mutombo. But your thoughts of the hire, Will T?
I can't say if it's a good hire or a bad hire at this point. It's a hire of nostalgia, right? You kept it inside the family. You had John Thompson Jr., then you had Craig Escherich, then you had John Thompson III, now you have Patrick Ewing. So they kept it within that Georgetown lineage, that Georgetown history, you know, of their better years. I can give you one thought on it. There are a lot of people that are going to compare this to Chris Mullin when he's at St. John's and Clyde Drexler when he was at Houston. This is on the surface, this isn't those situations because Patrick Ewing has been grinding for 15 years as an assistant coach in the NBA. He's now the head assistant coach of the Charlotte Hornets. I mean, well, currently he's the head assistant coach of Charlotte Hornets. Yeah. And then, you know, I don't know if he's going to stay into the playoffs, if they make the playoffs, but then he'll be the head coach of the Georgetown Hoyas. So from that aspect, it's not the same as those two situations. But what, as I spoke, when we discussed this last week, the key point for him will be, can he navigate the politics of DC high school and AAU basketball, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so he needs to come in. He needs to get a top assistant coach who really knows, who's been a former Division I head coach, right? So you need that. Then you need guys that can recruit the area, that have contacts with some of the AAU coaches and the high school coaches in this area. Then you need to establish a list of contacts up and down the Eastern Corridor, and then you need to be able to spread it out worldwide. I mean, you know, in the U.S. So he has a large a rather large task ahead of him. And I think anyone who thinks, who comes out and definitively says Patrick Ewing is going to be great at this job, I think you're BSing yourself. And also, I think the alumni and fan base need to give him time. You need to give him 3 to 4 years, because he's not going to turn it around overnight, because this is a team that's kind of devoid of talent at this point.
Yeah, because because of transfers. My thing about the whole, you know, John Thompson and recruiting and stuff, I think he has all the makeup to be an excellent recruiter. He has the makeup to be an excellent recruiter. That is, again, that doesn't mean he's going to put in the work. It's a little different, because he is blessed with one thing and a known commodity. He's an NBA Hall of Famer.
True, but do the kids of this generation know who the hell he is?
He's been in the NBA. If I tell a kid, they may not know. They may not have seen him play. That is the truth. They may not have seen him play. But I can guarantee you, because a lot of kids know about basketball players. Like, I've never, growing up, I've never seen Bob Cousy. But if you tell me Bob Cousy, I know Bob Cousy was an NBA player.
True.
All right. So, I never say Will Chamberlain, but I knew Will Chamberlain was an NBA player. I knew he scored 100 points, right? So
yes.
You know the impact of Patrick Ewing, not by watching him, probably just by hearing about him. So unless you want to go back and go to YouTube, right? So, now you know that Patrick Ewing played on the Dream Team.
Yeah, he played on the greatest team ever.
Exactly. So you know that. You know that Patrick Ewing is cool with Michael Jordan. Very popular dude in African American culture, right?
Yes.
Right? So again, he has linkage. Like, so he has power. He has, in terms of pull, to say, you know what, I'm Patrick Ewing. I play with Michael Jordan. I play with Magic Johnson. I play with Larry Bird. I play with David Robinson. I led the New York Knicks. I can go to the NBA Finals. So if I aspire to be an NBA player, right? I aspire, and let's put it to his realm. I aspire to be an NBA player, and I'm 6'11", 7 foot. Patrick Ewing comes into my home, an NBA Hall of Famer, all time great center, talks to me, and then he gives me. I may not see the play like you said, but I give you my resume and say, well, I work with, you know, Michael Jordan. You know, we pushed him in Game 6. You may have heard. Check me out. I led Georgetown to a national championship. That's holds clout because he's been there before. He's done it personally. So
there's a difference between you doing it personally and you doing it as a coach.
No, I get that. But you're talking about, now I can tell you, I can get you ready for the NBA. I've coached in the NBA. I can get you ready for the NBA. Like, he has the tools to entice a kid to come to Georgetown. Because what's the end all game? It's to be where? It's not to win. Yeah, it's not to win a national championship. If you're coming to my house, it's to get me to the NBA and to play at the highest level. He could even say this, and even the teaching part of Patrick Ewing, he came down to, like, and it used to be glorified when we were kids. He would come down from New York in the offseason and work with two young bigs that became NBA Hall of Famers. In Alonzo Mourning, Dikembe Mutombo.
Okay, but that was the 80s and the early 90s.
No, I'm giving you resume talk. It's only resume talk. It's all we can go off of, right?
Yeah.
Because no one knows what he can do. I don't know what he can do. But people say, well, I'm going to question his if he can recruit. But I'm saying he has the tools. My thing is, he has the tools to be able to recruit.
We don't know if he has the tools to be able to recruit, because he's never recruited. I think it's not – I don't think it's fair or – I don't think it's a fair opinion for you to say that he has the tools to recruit. He's never recruited. He's never had to go into the living rooms of a five-star recruit and sell himself and humble himself. He's a guy that's used to people pandering at him. Now he has to pander and awe at a 16 or 17 year old.
Okay.
Do you have the personality to humble yourself to, you know?
Of course. Yeah. Obviously you're going to have to. That's another argument in his own right. But all I can't go. I don't know Patrick Ewing personally. So for me to say that I don't know Patrick Ewing is a Gary Williams type of dude. Like, Gary Williams was that kind of dude. When he won a national championship, he wasn't humbling himself. He felt like you had to come to Maryland. He didn't have to go recruit you. You should want to come to Maryland. I don't know Patrick Ewing's temperament, but what I'm just saying is that if I am a parent or if I'm a kid and a star, not an average player who played in the NBA, we're talking about a Hall of Fame player in the NBA, is in my living room.
But then again, Chris Mullin is a Hall of Fame
Chris
player.
Chris Mullin.
I get it. Chris Mullin isn't at the level of Patrick Ewing, but Chris Mullin can say, I played on the greatest team
ever. He could, but he's not.
Chris Mullin can say, At one point, I averaged 25 points during the game in the NBA. I was one of the most prolific shooters.
But Chris Mullin, again, when you're talking about Chris Mullin, has Chris Mullin ever, to add that into the point you already made, has Chris Mullin ever paid his dues and coached before going to St. John's?
No.
Patrick Ewing, if you look at, we all talk about paying your dues, right, to be a head coach, right? People criticize Mark Jackson for coming from the booth to a head coach for Golden State Warriors. They criticize Doc Rivers from the booth to the Orlando Magic back then.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Patrick Ewing's a guy who paid his dues as an assistant. He was an NBA player, paid his dues as an assistant, and now has the opportunity to be a head coach. He now gets the opportunity to be head coach. I'm just saying, in terms of recruiting element, I think as a coach, I think Chris Mullin may struggle. The reason why he is probably struggling, not because of recruits. Chris Mullin is having to learn everything at one point. I mean, at this point, everything. And the NBA is different. You got set talent, right? Like, true. That's what Michael Jackson, you have set talent. Now, Chris Mullin has to teach. So he has to teach and recruit. Patrick Ewing has already been teaching in the NBA level. Because he's worked with Pop. What's his the guy name from now plays for the Toronto Raptors?
Powell?
No, the African, the Charlotte Bobcats had drafted. Not
Biombo.
Yeah, Biz Biombo. Biz Biombo was uber raw. He's worked with him to enough that he has some semblance of an offensive game. I get it,
but I think these are fair questions that people should ask themselves. Yeah, I know that people are getting very excited because it brings a sense of nostalgia with Patrick Ewing. Can he bring it, you know, can he, you know, restore Georgetown back to the yesteryears and when they were great? But it's fair to ask, you know.
It is fair.
We don't know what type of, you know, offensive or defensive philosophy he's going to have. We don't know if he can recruit. So these are questions that you have to ask.
And you've done a great job. I think we'll see you. Look, we'll see you. Terrence Fistfunk, good job, man. You gotta let people, Georgetown fans like myself, get all revved up. You know, I have to do this.
I thought A, that was the hire that they always were gonna make.
Yeah.
And B,
Wally called it. Yeah, go ahead.
Absolutely, because Wally said it. But no, and B, you know, I thought that, you know, Patrick Ewing is a guy that put it. I was happy. First and foremost, I was happy for him because he put in 15 years of work, groundwork.
Exactly.
You always are happy, a little bit happier for people
who put in that work.
Who put in that work and they reached a level of or attain a goal.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, we don't know if he's successful. He's going to be successful here or not, but he attains a goal. So, you know, I was happy for him, but then I had a bunch of questions that popped into my head.
I got you. And it's all legitimate, and those are all legitimate questions. Just real quick before we go to break, I want to mention this too, because it's been pissing me off about this whole thing that they need to get JT3 out of the program. Big John out of the program. And no one says that about other, and I don't like, it's rubbed me the wrong way in so many different facets. What was Georgetown before he got to and you mentioned about Bobby Knight. What was Georgetown before?
It was nothing. He built the program.
Yeah, he built the program.
He is Georgetown basketball.
So for everybody said this program won't flourish without him, he is the program. And my thing is that why wouldn't you want a guy who built the program, who's won a championship in Georgetown, build a nothing program into a national powerhouse when he was there? Why? What's all the talk about? Well, this program won't progress without him, dude. You were nothing without him.
I get it, but then you also have to, you know, I don't like to say devil's advocate,
yeah, gotcha.
But there's another perspective to that argument, which is, all right, you were what you were.
Yeah.
You aren't that now.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move forward. But the reality is, because college athletics is a business more than anything,
mm-hmm.
John Thompson is always going to have a seat at the table because A, he's on the board of Nike.
Yeah, that's true.
B, his name brings a lot of cachet and money to the program. And C, they just opened up an athletic center on campus that bears his name. That he's raised money for. He has a significant
I just think,
donation to. So,
yeah.
you know, I understand. I get what you're saying, and I don't necessarily agree with the other people who said, you know, who've
wrote things and whatnot.
Yeah, who've made the opinion that who are of the opinion that John Thompson, Big John, John Thompson Jr. shouldn't be a part of this program. No, he built the program. He built the program. He made it into what it is. So for those people that continue to say, you know, he shouldn't be a part of it, you're crazy. In my opinion, as long as he's alive, kicking and breathing, he wants to be a part of that program or has a place in that, wants to have a place at the program, why not? I don't see people were in the outrage when Dean Smith, when he retired,
I'm done.
And he was still part of the program.
You said my point right there for me. That's all I want to say. Like, it is what it is. That's what annoys me. Anyway, man, thank you, Willie. Thank you. All right, everybody go to break, man. But yesterday, it was opening day for the Baltimore Orioles and the Washington Nationals. We'll talk about their perspective games. You listen to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure.
No man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings.
All right, you're listening to the Urban Sports Day. Myself, Wally, my boy, Will T. Yesterday, the Washington Nationals beat the Miami Marlins 4-2. What did you learn about the Washington Nationals?
One thing I learned was that Steven Strasburg may have changed his approach to pitching. He had a lot of ground ball outs opposed to overpowering pitchers, hitters with strikeouts. So that could bode well. That could help relieve some of the injuries, you know, that he's facing in the past because he was a power pitcher. Adam Lind came off the bench, hit a two-run home run.
I liked him in Toronto.
You know that. And Bryce Harper, if Bryce Harper's healthy, you know, the price of that next contract is going to continue to go up. If he's healthy, he can get back to the levels, the MVP level that he was at prior to last season.
Yeah, Bryce had a good spring. Bryce hit a home run. He's got this crazy streak of hitting home runs in opening day. I think Trey Turner is a good sign. You saw what he can do. Made a spectacular play at shortstop. So you see that, you know, he has the range. He seems like he definitely has the arm strength. He should have the range. We all know he's fastest, you know what. So, but I think Trey Turner, following last season, with, you know, it's early, but what he did opening day, they had a stolen base as well. You talk about Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper, if he can be healthy, if he can be that guy, this team is super dangerous. And then the addition of Matt Wieters helping, and I've said this before, I think Matt Wieters as a catcher, not as a hitter, brings so much to the table for the pitching staff, and how he can coast Steven Strasburg or any of the Nats pitchers to seven innings or eight innings, knowing that the potential that these guys have. I believe that the Marlins went up 2-0 pretty early, right?
With
2-0 early, and having Matt Wieters at the back of, you know, helping call the pitches with Strasburg and working with him as a catcher. That's what you do. Helping him get to the seventh inning. He went seventh innings, right?
He went seventh.
Seventh inning. Getting to the eighth inning, pitching seven innings. Just a testament of Matt Wieters as a catcher. So to me, I think the Nationals are a team that, to me, are vying, you know, to compete with the Mets for the NL East.
One other thing I learned, Blake Treinen, he's not scared. He faced for his first save in the major leagues. You face the heart of the Miami of Florida Marlins lineup.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't scare, didn't flinch.
I think he was hitting, he hit 97.
Yeah, he hit 97. He looked good. You know, now you're just waiting for Rendon to come back.
And if
you get Rendon back, then realistically, you only have possibly two dead spots in your lineup as far as hitting. With Ryan Zimmerman and Jason Wirth. I mean, if Jason Wirth, I mean, if Ryan Zimmerman stays healthy, he can give you some pop. He can give you some pop. But and also Jason Wirth, we don't know how much he has left in the tank. This is his last season, him being 37. But Jason Wirth is always a guy that challenges the pitcher. You know, if he doesn't get a hit, he always fouls off a lot of balls, a lot of pitches.
Give me a prediction of the Washington Nationals record.
That's hard. I know it's 162 games.
No, not that. Just I mean, yeah, I have to do math in my head. It's like,
yeah, no. I think they win. I think it's fair to say they win 95 games.
95?
Yeah, I think they win 95 games.
I think they're definitely having an opportunity to win 95 games. I think they're that strong of a team. I think if we're really gonna have a fight with the Mets, I think the Mets stay healthy. That's gonna be a battle. Go ahead.
The one thing I will say that kind of concerns me is pitching depth, starting pitching depth. You gave away two of your top prospects in Lucas Giolito and Ronaldo Lopez. Mm-hmm. And also you gave up your first round pick in Dunning. Mm-hmm. So you gave up three arms for one guy, you know, Adam Eaton. And so one thing that concerns me, are they going to have the pitching depth? Because this is historically has been a team that's had injuries mm-hmm. in their starting rotation.
And we'll see, but I think they're definitely a strong team. I think they're one of the stronger teams in the whole major leagues, and I think they will compete. And I think they'll do better in the postseason than they did last year.
All right, let's go up 295 to your team, Baltimore Orioles. Yesterday they defeated the Toronto Blue Jays 3-2 in extra innings. Mark Trumbo with a walk off home run in the 11th. What did you learn from the Orioles after one game?
It's similar to what they were the last couple of seasons. They're built off of their offense and home run ability. Trumbo had two RBIs in the walk-off home run. And also their bullpen. Gausman, who started open day, Kevin Gausman, who pitched well, went about five innings. But then you had Givens come in the game. And he gave up one run, but then the bullpen shut it down. Zach Brent still did what he does. Shuts down the opponents. Had a key double play ball in that game. Then you had again, and it's just to hold the fort down for Mark Trumbo to hit that game winning that walk off home run in the 11th inning. This team, to me, is predicated off that. Now, if they can find a way to improve in their pitching, if Kevin Gausman can pitch that way. And give up, a couple runs, average about three runs per three. If he can get his ERA to three, it's about 3.14 or whatever. And you got Dylan Bundy. If he can pitch at a high level, these two guys can hold it down. Chris Tillman's is out with an injury. If he can come back, that'd be the third best starter. We're talking about a guy who used to be your ace, be your third best starter. If they can improve on that and have the bullpen do what they've been doing over the last since Buck Showalter's been the manager, this team will be able to compete for another AL East or wild card. But to me, this season definitely predicated on what Adam Jones can bring to the table. I think Adam Jones had such a great WBC tournament in terms of getting more notoriety, some big plays that I feel like is going to bring more confidence to his more confidence for him to it for this season. So. I think the Orioles probably will probably finish. I want to say you said 95 for the Nationals. I think that's a good number. I'm gonna say 91, 92 wins for the Orioles.
91, 92.
Yeah, I think they'll do better than they did last season.
Okay, that may be tough. You know, you have the Boston Red Sox, and you also have the New York. The Yankees look like. You know, with that young talent, they look like they can be a thorn in their side.
But their pitching is a struggle. Their pitching is a struggle. You had Tanaka. Tanaka got beat bad in the opening day. But I don't think that's going to mean anything. But their pitching has always been a question mark. But then you have, the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays, I feel like, are going to take a step back. They lost. I'm out having a moment. Their first baseman from last – Encarnacion. They lost Encarnacion. And then you have – and then the Rays always have issues scoring 9 times out of 10. The Red Sox are going to be a team. They're going to be a team to beat. But they lost Big Poppy, so we'll see how they play.
Really random question.
Go ahead.
Baseball, 162 games, right?
Yeah.
Basketball, 82 games.
Yes.
Basketball, you don't pay attention until Christmas, till a quarter of the season's over.
Yeah.
When do you really get into watching baseball?
From opening day.
Really?
I love opening day. I think every, especially in the AL East, like you mentioned in the past, every game counts, man. It really does. So I get into it.
So you watch? I'm not.
I watch over 100 games.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fair to say. I watch over 100 games of the Nationals just simply because there isn't anything on TV during the summer.
Yeah. So I'm. Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right. Remember.
And plus, I told you I don't really watch a lot of TV. Sports, news, movies. I don't really have a lot of program series that I watch.
Well, you know I'm a diehard Redskins fan. The Redskins signed Zach Brown from the Buffalo Bills. He played for the Buffalo Bills last year. We'll talk about that after the break. It's the Urban Sports thing.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Listening to the Urban Sports Team, my boy Will T, and I am Wally. Ray Jeezy's missing.
Sweet isn't man. He always?
He is nowadays. He's like he's a busy dude though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's like a rapper. He's busy like a rapper.
I hear you.
You know what I mean? He's just doing this thing, man. Hey, with the Redskins signed former Buffalo Bills inside linebacker Zach Brown to a 1-year deal. Good sign.
I'm not gonna necessarily say it's good, because wasn't he the middle linebacker for Buffalo when they were gashed by Miami? Jay Ajayi ran for almost 500 yards on them in two games.
Yeah, I believe he was. Yeah, but you know, he was second in the league in tackles.
He was second in the league in tackles. But to me, it's kind of I'm not gonna say baffling. It's kind of head scratching. You had a guy who had a similar skill set here 2 years ago and Keenan Robinson, right?
Oh, man, don't do that to me.
No.
You're right, though.
No, I mean, but Zach Brown, he's a better tackler. Yeah. But you had a guy, you know, who brings – I hear everyone talking about the speed and athleticism of Zach Brown. But you had a guy here 2 years ago in Keenan Robinson who brought a similar style to play, right? Keenan Robinson was good sideline to sideline or in between the numbers to sideline. Zach Brown seems like he's good from, you know, from hash to hash. He struggled, at least, you know, I have the perception that he struggled against the run because you allowed Jay Ajayi to run for almost 500 yards on him. So it's definitely it's an upgrade in the athleticism that you had in the middle with Will Compton and Mason Foster. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. If you had the grade 1 to 5, I think it's a 3.5 signing.
3.5?
Yeah.
I think it's I think I'm looking for what they have at the inside linebacker. I think it's a 5 out of 5. Because what they have.
Okay.
Yeah, but I get your point, though. You might as well just kept Keenan Robinson. Totally agree with you. Like,
yeah.
Totally agree with
you. I don't understand. I mean, maybe there's something. Like I said, I don't break down tape.
Yeah.
But
I don't
just
break down tape. Like,
no, but I'm just saying, just looking at the skill set is very similar to what you had in Keenan Robinson.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. Dude, you won't have me arguing that point. I like the signing because what it means to, you know, like for the Redskins defense, it's trying to bring more speed to the table compared to last year. Again, they had speed, decided to let it go. That's on them. I think, in my opinion, when I look at this move, I'm like, okay, you know that the inside linebacker was a weakness. So you're not saying, okay, well, we can mask that position. You know, you're trying to now tackle that. You're trying to tackle that issue. I feel like, you know what, with the 17 pick overall, we know that Reuben Foster is going down in the draft. I think now you're like, you know what, we can add in a high quality inside linebacker, a young guy that's highly touted, could be one of the better inside backers that we've seen, you know, in a while. Well, you know, in that mix, I'm sorry, in that mold of inside linebackers in terms of the some of the more dominant inside linebackers. Now you can draft him. Now your defense looks a lot more stable with two good inside linebackers.
No, and to further your point, I think you further strengthen the middle of your defense.
Yes.
You know, Zach Brownie, you have the two new safeties in Swearinger and also Sua Cravens. And a point that a lot of people have missed in this area is Washington signed Phil Taylor, the former nose guard from Cleveland, to be their nose guard, to be the guy who a lot of people said they wanted a big, sloppy 300 some odd. I don't want to call him sloppy, but he's a big 330-pound nose tackle. So you strengthen the middle of your defense.
No, I'm with you, and I totally agree with you. And on Twitter, I talked about the signing of Zach Brown. My man Brandon Rogers said they won't be drafting a linebacker high. Might he play some in some out. Will cover better than Foster.
Once again, man, you had a similar skill set in Keenan Robinson, in my opinion.
Yeah, I disagree with that. Like I told you before, you still have within these two individuals
Foster and Will Compton.
They're two slow inside linebackers who can't really. And I think Will Compton can dissect things. He's just not fast enough. Foster can't play the pass. He's not good against the pass. Brown is good against the pass. He's been known to be decent against the pass. You bring in a Reuben Foster combined with him, now you got something that you can really work with. So to me, I think that you still need to get inside linebacker if. Just even though you have Zach Brown, you still have to get an inside linebacker to match up with him. You know, some of the greater we've seen in football, some of the best defenses out there had two high-powered inside linebackers. One comes to mind, San Francisco 49ers with local product Bowman.
Navarro Bowman
and Patrick Willis.
Yep.
So to me, that's definitely a key combination that if the Redskins have the opportunity to pair, they need to go for it.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's now time for another commercial break. When we get back from break, we're going to have Miss CC Towns from GladiateHers.com to talk about the UConn Huskies women's team losing in the Final Four and South Carolina winning the national championship with my girl Dawn Staley. You listen to the Urban Sports Saint.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
I seen your girl post a BM, so I hit her in the DM. All eyes, yeah, I see him. Yeah, that's your man, I hate to be him.
I'm Rashad Ross, I listen to Urban Sports Scene.
Yeah, you're listening to Urban Sports Scene. I'm Wally here, my boy Ice Willie T. Willie T, what are you talking about, man? You talking about you got into it, man.
No, we're watching the Wizards in the Charlotte Hornets game. And to me, I never understood why do guys, you know, 3-on-1, the first thing you do rather than the guys who are running on the wing, rather than cut towards the basket, they just stop at the 3-point line.
Oh, yeah, my kids did it all the time. I had to coach them out of that thing.
Yeah, no, I was always taught that you run if you're coming down the wing, you run through the lane and then you come out on the opposite wing, you know, if you don't get the ball cutting towards the basket. Just like for guys just stop at the 3-point line rather than putting pressure on that one guy. I don't get it, but hey, that's what it is.
Anyway, right now we have Miss CC Towns from GladiateHers.com. CC, how are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
I'm peachy and swell. Just swell.
Sound like that, dude. That wasn't you.
No, that's just me being me. I do that all the time. That ain't you.
All right.
I would never insult you. I would not do that to you.
I wouldn't take it as an insult. Okay. All good. I would just laugh.
Okay. Hilarious. So you, Cece. So obviously you watched the national championship game with.
Of course.
And it was a great game. It really was. I love the UConn Mississippi State game. I thought that was a great game, to be honest with you. So the South Carolina Mississippi State game. What were your thoughts of the game? And also, I want to talk about Dawn Staley a little bit and talk about her winning a national championship as a player and a coach.
I think it was a well-played, well-coached game. I think that, there was a different level of excitement in general about the game. It was sold out. A friend of mine was there, and she was telling me, you know, that they were ticket scalpers at a woman's, basketball game. Like, that's cool with me.
That means,
you know, that it was in high demand and the energy was there. But I just think the game, it was a really well played, well coached game. I think, it was obviously really great to see Don, finally get that NCAA championship, title. Even though, you know, she couldn't get it as an athlete, you know, the fact that she was able to sort of marshal these women together, in the face of adversity, you know, their season, a lot of people sort of chalked their season up. So, I just think it was great. He had great storylines on both sides. It was a great game.
Go with
I was going to ask you, hey, how you doing, CZ?
Hey, how are you?
I'm all right. I have one question for you. Do you think this will be the women's NCAA championship that's remembered because Connecticut lost to Mississippi State, or that South Carolina won their first championship?
I think it's going to be remembered because Dawn and USC won their first. You know, I think that obviously UConn losing, the way they did was a big story. But, I mean, the headlines that I'm seeing now, I don't even see UConn really being mentioned. And I don't, the conversations that I've been having,
uh-huh,
it's been about Don. It's been about, you know, what they're going to do next year. So I don't think that UConn overshadowed what USC was able to do. And I call it USC. I'm from South Carolina, so forgive me, because I know most people don't call it USC. But
but I thought that Dawn Staley won a championship in college. She didn't?
No, she didn't. Wow. She lost three times. Well, she made it to, I want to say, the Final Four three times.
Yeah.
You know, it was, yeah. So this was her first one.
Oh, see, I always assumed that she won one. So now that she's won a championship as a coach, you know, we all think about, you know, Lisa Leslie, Cheryl Swoops, who tried to coach. Where would you put her in terms of iconic individuals, iconic women basketball players? I mean, obviously, do it as a player, you know, being a Hall of Fame player, and now a championship coach.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I wouldn't necessarily try to pit them against one another or say one's more iconic than the other, but they are all, you know, iconic in their own right.
Uh-huh.
And I think, you know, you've been able to have multiple generations of people sort of interact with Dawn Staley's career, and people feel like they know her in a different way than they know some of the other players, because they have literally followed her from her childhood, so to speak, of, you know, college basketball, you know, to playing in the Olympics, to, you know, literally following her first coaching gig to now. Like, she's like the epitome of women's basketball for a lot of people. So, she's iconic in her own right, and probably in a different way, because we've been able to follow her for so long.
How do you not mention her on Martin? Like, you didn't mention that part either? Like, she was on Martin. She was on Martin. You didn't say she was on Martin either. That's iconic, too.
That is. She is absolutely, you know, a part of pop culture.
Yeah, you can't. You mentioned all the accolades, and now how you not going to mention her on Martin?
How dare you?
Exactly. Exactly. I'm waiting for you. I'm like, Martin. She was on Martin.
Well, my bad, Martin.
I am about to say, you know, that's, you gotta look out for Martin. All right. So I mean, Will T mentioned you, UConn. Was UConn losing to Mississippi State the biggest upset in women's basketball? And if so, and how would you compare that to an upset in college basketball in the men's game?
Yeah, I'm going to say it's probably the biggest in college basketball, period.
Period. Ooh,
I mean,
okay,
you,
gotcha.
You, like, I mean, this team was on this incredible win streak, and not just, like, winning by a few points, but, like, double digits was the standard for them to win by.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Last season, you know, Mississippi State, they lost to UConn by 60 points.
I know.
So they're not supposed to be here, and if they're there, they're not supposed to come anywhere near taking a W.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that, and obviously I haven't been watching college basketball as long as, you know, a lot of people,
mm-hmm.
so I can speak to what I know, mm-hmm. and in my memory, I don't ever remember there being such a major upset. Maybe, you know, I saw some stats about the UNLV-Duke game a few years ago.
Yeah.
So maybe that comes close to it, but I just feel like the giant that was, or that is still, I mean, not say was, the giant that is Geno and UConn, you know, compared to most people didn't have a clue about what Mississippi State had to offer. You know, it's like a legit David and Goliath story, and I don't think that, you know, even men's basketball has had an upset of that caliber. And I mean, you know, I have people like texting me that night, like, are you watching it? Like, people who I know don't watch no women's college basketball. They're like, texting me like, did you see that? I'm like, of course I saw it. Like, so I just think, you know, the fact that we even had people tuning in who typically don't even care, you know, that speaks volumes as well.
See, that's a good one. That's a good comparison. The UNLV Duke game. That is because Duke UNLV blew out Duke the year before, and then they played him in the Final Four, and they lost that game. That is a very good comparison. The only thing I would honestly like, there have been some. I don't know if Will T can help refresh me. There have been some upsets within the first round of the tournament. With like, was it Coppin beating
USC?
Coppin,
right.
USC,
yeah,
South Carolina. Yeah,
State.
That's was that a 215 seed?
Yep.
Okay, so that's the only thing that, but I don't even think that's bigger than this because UConn is it's like the program.
I definitely think. Yeah, I mean, to your point now, they weren't, Mississippi State was a two seed, right?
Yeah, uh-huh.
So technically, they're supposed to be right there with them, but
we know that's not the case.
Yeah.
We're talking about UConn. Yeah. We know that's not the case. So did the, like, and this is also to the point that Will T said, did the Nash, in your opinion, in terms of ratings, we'll put our business hats on, in terms of ratings, did the national championship game take a hit not having UConn in it?
No, I would bet money that the ratings were higher this year than they were last year. I think a lot of people, you know, people who are even fans of women's college basketball are like, all right, we're kind of sick of seeing UConn win. Like, we're ready for something new. And then the fact that, you know, UConn had just been upset by, you know, Mississippi State, like it was like kind of where UConn got upset. Like they didn't get upset two rounds before; they got upset in the Final Four. And so it's like, dang, like we gotta see if Mississippi State can take it all the way. And so I think there was just, and the way she played, the way William played was just like, I mean, people started watching her and paying attention to this. Little, you know,
they sure did.
Petite baller.
I did.
You know, like let's see if she can literally put this team on her back and claim the national championship. So yeah, I would bet money that the ratings this year were better than they were last year.
No, I agree. I remember watching it and watching her take the step back shot and make in overtime to win the game. And I was saying to myself, like, yeah, UConn lost. This has to be good for women's basketball in a way that you don't have the same old, and now you have a new story to follow.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I totally agree with you. Before we let you go, Cece, tell the folks how they can reach you and you know, check your content out and reach you on social media.
Yeah, guys, definitely check me out. I'm the Sporty Esquire, Sporty Esquire, on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and then the blog. We'd love to have new followers, new people commenting. Is Gladiate Herd, G L A DIATHERS.com, and that's our handle on all our social media outlets: Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
All right, sounds good. Also, CC, I've been trying to, you know, catch up to this, like, the networking site, the networking app you put me onto, and it's like so much to like read up on. I'm getting like buzzed every which way at work.
You know, GroupMe.
Yeah,
I'm GroupMe.
Yeah.
GroupMe is lit.
It's lit. It is lit. That is true. It is lit. But CC, thanks for being on the show. We appreciate you. Hopefully, we'll have you on within the next couple of weeks. Okay.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, guys. All right.
No
night.
Problem. Have a good night.
Have a good one. All right.
Bye.
That's CC from CC Towns from GladiatorHers.com. You heard what she had to say. Very insightful young lady that knows a lot about the women's college basketball game. So make sure you check out her blogs and her content at www.gladiatorhers.com. Hey, Will T, what's good, man? We're about to close the show out, bro.
Nothing, just another week. Thank you all for listening to us. You know, sports fans just like yourselves, taking the time out to listen to us, two guys who just have an opinion, who don't have an affiliation with any major network. So thanks, man.
That means we have no shackles.
Yep. Say whatever the hell we want.
We want to. I know, exactly. And I can say shackles and not feel bad about it. Think about that.
I got a terrible joke I would say, but I'm not going to say it.
You're not. Yeah, don't say it, man. Both teams play hard. Anyway, you listen to Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig.
Deuces.
Hey, Mega, lead us out, big homie. Swag, pledge allegiance to the swag, pledge allegiance to the swag, pledge allegiance.